The, in all departments?
In the departments, in anthropology and English, the two departments I was involved with most.
At Iowa, where I was a, where I didn't work, they said that it was important, but nobody much cared if you know the chairman of the history department got tired with his lectures and took a month off. And nobody raised any objection. That's a little more like it is today. I don't know whether how it has changed, but the importance of teaching regularly and well, if you could, regularly, was part of the of what was in the atmosphere.
A little more. I just want to ask a few, one or two more general questions. I don't have the main information that I was.
Reserved to teachers.
Well, the question.
Well, you had a question.
Yeah, the question I was going to ask is obviously we'll be doing a chapter on President Frank and one on President Dykstra and at least one on E.B. Fred.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, he may take a couple. But who are the other major figures, like between 25 and 30 and 46 or even 25 and 73 if you want to jump in, who were not presidents of the university? During this time, Celery is
Celery is obviously one. I'd think Paul Nappan. Now there is a difficult one in some respects, but Nappan was kind of the conscience of the university. E.B. Fred, I think, was made unhappy by Paul Nappan, who was the man who was a stickler for propriety. But Paul Nappan, it was to Paul Nappan many, we were told that the university owned the library. The legislature was about ready to cut out the library appropriations, and Paul would have been promised the university library for years, up until 52, university and Historical Society were housed in that little building, but they kept being promised the university library. And I don't know the details about that, but I'm told that Paul mobilized all of his former students, all of his friends around the state to bring pressure on both E.B. Fred, who was going to, or whoever was handling the legislative lobbying, and on the legislature to keep the appropriation from being dropped for the library.
I didn't know that.
Now, on a very small or minor thing, during the period that we were using, we had a student going through the Regents' records for us. And we got up to the Regents' vault. We had been assured free access, as I am sure you have been assured free access. Free access to all university records. There was a folder of on the Ely trial that Irv Wiley wanted, and the Secretary of the Regents told him, no, that file is sealed. Irv reported it to Merle and to me. We took it very seriously. Instead of going back on the Secretary, we went to Paul Nappan and said, I really didn't like what we said, because I was here just on a temporary appointment at that time, but we said that we've been denied access to these records in the Regents' office. It will. We don't know yet what our decision will be. We, on further consideration, we may feel that it is impossible to continue with the project and simply drop it, because we can't be in a situation in which we don't have access to the records. Or, if we don't view it as that quite that seriously, we might want to drive past this roadblock and then in our introduction pointedly point out that it has been impossible for us to examine all the records normally considered necessary for study of this sort. But we thought that Nappan was chairman of the Centennial History Committee. And Naplan said, well, now, don't discuss this any further on either of these possibilities until you've given me 24 hours. And we said, fine. And the next morning, Naplan called and said, there's probably been some mistake on the part of the Secretary of the Faculty. He didn't really understand what went on. Well, I called the president of the board, Mr. Sensenbrenner, and I explained to him what had happened and that this is something that should not ever happen in a university, and moreover, the regents had pledged access to the records. Sensenbrenner called the secretary and told him that he had no authority to withhold anything. And he called me and told me that he had just made a mistake. He didn't know that Wiley was working for the on the history. And we went over, I went over and got it.
Was the file that hot?
No. Of course it wasn't. But there's Paul Naplan for you at his best. And you'll find a number of cases where academic freedom, proper procedures, et cetera, come under question. Mm-hmm. And Naplan apparently emerged as a champion of the faculty. So he should be kept in mind. I think
Harrington speaks a great deal about him.
Huh?
Harrington speaks a great deal about him.
The I don't think Harrington liked Paul, but
well,
he respected him.
He respected him. Yes.
Ingram is certainly not a large consequence. E.B. Fred, you already get it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Characterize E.B. Fred for
yes.
me.
I won't, but I don't know. Except I'll tell you this. There, from time to time, you might hear people saying E.B. Fred was something of a fuddy-duddy.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
He was a fuddy-duddy in the same way that Eisenhower apparently was a fuddy-duddy. He'd use it to confuse you. He was a great guy to create committees. He'd have a problem up there in his office and go out in the hall and waylay the first two or three professors that came along and have them come in and talk about his problem. often just use them as sounding boards.
Mm.
And sometimes you'd go to him and try to get something, and you'd swear that he's never going to, never can even get through to him because he wanted to show you his piece of hybrid corn that he had in plastic, and he wanted to talk to you about how they ran these breeding co-ops out here. Usually it was he knew what you were after, and he wasn't going to turn you down, but he wasn't even going to let you get to the point with any question where you asked your question. But I remember on one occasion he was considering the appointment of a new dean of education of all places, and somebody had told him that I knew a couple of the people who were serving under the guy. He was president of Iowa State Teachers at the time. So he called me and said, is it true? And I said, yes, I did know a few members of the faculty. Well, I'd like to have you put in a telephone call. Now this, I said, this is somewhat confidential, but I'd like to have you call these men, and there are three things I want you to ask each one about Mocker, the president, that they were considering doing here. And he ticked them off, 1, 2, 3. And write me a memo, and if you could have it for me by 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, I'd appreciate it. And on this case, none of this flim-flam, not a bit of it. It was and it was 1, 2, 3. One, he wanted to know how he got along with faculty. One, he wanted to know how he was on the matter of academic freedom, how he was on research. You can pick anything else you pick up, but I want information.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out, I called the people he told me to, that is the, he didn't even ask who I was calling. I did happen to know a couple of people there. I called him, got responses, and the fellow, at least from their vantage point, looked magnificent. He came over here, but he didn't want the job.
This was for education.
Department of Dean's Education.
They finally get?
I've forgotten where it was then.
What stage?
Yeah. But E.B. Fred was a. You've heard this before, I expect. A man devoted to the university. An operator. He was never one to seek a high profile, I guess the phrase is. He liked to work quietly, behind the scenes if possible. He could come out if the going got very rough. But on the whole, he didn't like to the grandstand play, such as Frank liked it. He always wanted to keep things quiet, be reasonable, and come to good conclusions. He was, somebody told me this shortly after he got to be president, that he had run, for all practical purposes, he'd run the, would it be the Bacterial,
Bacterial
Association for years. From behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But one year they made him president. And it was the worst year he ever put in because he had to be right out there in front.
Interesting. What about Dykstra?
I don't know anything about him at all. Never met him. Let's see. I may have met him. No, he was out of town the only time I came through when he was here. He wasn't very good.
That's kind of the impression I've been getting.
Somebody. Who did the history of the College of Agriculture?
Russell?
Wrote the history of the college. His name, I should add it a moment ago. His father was a member of the board for a time, was editor of Hortifera, and then one of his father's observation on Dykstra was he was just a big stalwart, a big stolid Dutchman who had no notion of what a university ought to be, but had run Cincinnati as a business, as a city manager, and got it through a flood, hadn't he?
Yeah.
But the University of Wisconsin was not.
It's really interesting that after all of the charges against Frank, so many of them revolving around the fact that he wasn't he wasn't an academician.
Yeah.
That they should go out and then hire the city manager from Cincinnati. I would think that after that they would go out of their way to bring in a college dean at least, if not president.
Yeah. You never know what moved them. I was amazed that they took Dykstra.
But Dykstra had an academic background. I mean, Cincinnati was the immediately preceding job.
But he had been a dean. Yeah. I remember we were much amused when we looked at the Regents hiring Chamberlain, who followed Basque.
Mm-hmm.
And on that one, we had magnificent records, the Kai's records, and Paul, and there were one or two others. So we had almost a blow-by-blow on that. But the thing that amused us was that the search committee, for all practical purposes, identified the traits that they disliked in Bascom. And And then listed the opposite traits as the man that they wanted for their new man, and then sought to apply them to Chamberlain. Well, how well they did, I don't did it. I don't know. They got Chamberlain out of the U.S. Geological Survey.
That's right.
And there they got a man with, well, he was just right for the transition from college to university. He's the guy who opened up the research, really gave an idea of extension, started graduate work, et cetera, et cetera. Quite a guy.
I started asking you this question before, and then the last tape, I think it was the same thing this time. Looking back on your volumes 1 and 2, retrospect, is there anything that you would do differently now if you were to write the volumes at this point in time?
I suppose, but I couldn't identify it anymore.
So there's no major...
There's no major difficulty.
Why don't I...
There are small things, I suppose, that where we didn't have the information. I suppose I haven't really read him for 10 or so years since I've even looked at him. I was pleased when the most recent edition of the Harvard Guide, they were still identified as the setting the standard for them. It's a very nice statement. That Dick Showerman, had put it together, and Frank Fidel had put it together. They say the university histories extend all the way from that Curry and Carstensen volume to Shameless Propaganda or something like that. So, which I thought would be nice being on the
I want to tell you that John and my job would be a lot easier if you guys wouldn't have done such a good job. that's a tough act to follow, let me tell you.
I think it was a pretty good job, but I don't think there's anything in it that makes it hard to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the great virtue of it was fairly complete and sensible coverage of the major aspects of the rise of the state university. Your difficulty will be, it seems to me, that the enormous amount of documentation you face and the difficulty of what you may have in being submerged being lost in the forest.
To go back to thing we were talking about before, John and I guess are going to have to become experts at sifting and winnowing of our own. We'll have to go get a copy of that plaque and place it on our office desk.
Did you say you had a point of view? Could you state what your point of view was about the history of the university?
As a matter of fact, I think if we were writing today, we would be less optimistic. But a point of view, I think neither of us were really caught in what you could probably say a point of view. What we were trying to do is look at the full record to the extent that we could and watch this institution emerge. And it was a very interesting, I think very exciting kind of thing to, as you see these people flooding this land in the 1830s and 40s and 50s with all the ideas that they had, and ideas as all the people ever have in organizing their institution, their lives and so on. And a certain group they don't call the university into existence. These characters back in 1787, wasn't it, with the Northwest Ordinance. Not the Northwest Ordinance, but the Ohio, the sale of land to the Ohio Company, had made their first two township grant for a literary institution or something of that sort. And it's that hunk of wild land that that gets them started. And it's the habit. Habit? Well, it's something. This is their secular cathedral, by golly, is being erected. And I think one of the things that would probably be present if we wrote that history today would be some greater caution about the value of all of the biological research and the physical research. Well, we certainly, sure as hell, would show. The experiment stations were magnificent. For example, in Wisconsin's with those two early discoveries, the Babcock milk test, suddenly made the scientists miracle necromancers, and the work that Russell did on bacteriology, control of bovine tuberculosis, and canning, pedestrian thing, it's important. I don't think anybody foresaw the herbicides and the insecticides. Nobody foresaw where physics research would take us. And we were still, we're not entirely blindly optimistic when we were writing, but the future looked less bleak in terms of the rewards of scientific research when we were writing than it will be when volumes 3 and 4 come out.
And that really will come to issue and come to a head in volume 4 during the late 60s, certainly.
Yeah, I think both of us, along with almost everybody else, is enormously impressed by what had been accomplished, particularly in the Ag College, particularly with the health sciences there, vitamins, dicumarol, the heart's work on the biochemists were terrific over there. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the ironies that it was the Ag College that made the great contributions to human health, not the med school. Mm-hmm. Still is true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Would you say that one would want to look into what the university was doing in for the future of society, and would say has it paid much attention to environmental research? And would that be something that a historian should think about in writing?
They don't really get around to it, do they, until the 70s and 80s?
Well, maybe they don't, but I mean...
You had Leopold. Leopold and the people over there who were, a few of them who were concerned with preserving the good earth, as it were. You have to work on rural land zoning, and things of that sort.
Water resources.
Engineering was doing a little on that. I don't know how much of a story there is there. Mm-hmm. Probably not as much as they would like to have.
Do you think, as somebody who's been an administrator, can write this history? Would he not be too involved in defending a point of view? Neither of you were. You were both just historians.
Yeah. Is your man an administrator? Mm-hmm.
Don't have a man.
No, they have the ultimate writer. We don't know who the
ultimate writer is. Oh, he hasn't been picked yet.
No. Or she.
It hasn't been
picked. It hasn't.
Yeah. You have then to take fairly complete notes, don't you?
Yes.
And having pretty well, because you will control pretty much what the...
The direction where things are heading, yes. Fortunately, Xerox machines are abundant on this campus. I think we
fortunately
really
or unfortunately.
Well, unfortunately.
Your point about notes is the important one. It's easier to read notes than to read text, let alone to listen to
You have, is that a...
Yeah, this is the index of all the ideas in the oral history project. See, if there are good ideas, one can catch them here. You just, which is what the computer was used for.
Oh, the computer will, if I want to find out about...
No, the computer, on the computer was put this index. The material was indexed.
Uh-huh.
But you can tell from this where to look in anybody's volume.
The ideal thing would be able to then punch them up
of
on the computer.
Yes.
A couple $1 million you'd like to leave to the university.
Yeah.
I thought...
just what the John Lindy question does.
Oh, all of this stuff. Ford Foundation. What are you going to do about the Ford Foundation grants to the university? I see a note of foundation. A note on foundations. Emily Hahn is here.
I don't know.
She was a woman student in the 1920s who decided to go into engineering. God damn it, nobody went into engineering, and she did. She subsequently has become a very well-known writer, and she writes. She's, I suppose, in her 60s now. She's got a lot of things in The New Yorker.
Why don't I know her?
Yeah.
She's done a lot of writing recently on chimpanzees and gorillas and things like that, but she's a freelance writer, I guess you'd say. She was a...
They're going to have to know all of those, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, Emily Hahn graduated about the same time
as Dorothy
Knappen's class.
Mm-hmm.
She has an autobiographical volume in which she tells about her years at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I just happened to be read that a month or so ago.
Really?
Still charming.
Yes, she said. Mm.
Celery had refused to let her take a course with somebody over in engineering, so she moved over to engineering. Engineers all hated her, and so she stayed.
Well, that is another thing that we will be emphasizing in Volumes 3 and 4, I think, is the role of women in the university, the increasing role of women over time.
No, decreasing and then increasing.
Decreasing,
you know,
yes.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. The women fell off, didn't they?
Very much so, yeah. After the teens and 20s.
Yeah. And then came roaring back. And I still remember the time I was confronted when I was a subaltern dean in grad school by a woman from town who had come in to... She'd made an appointment, and I knew she was going to ask why we didn't give women more fellowships and scholarships in grad school. And I had been forehanded and checked the data, and when she came in and made her demand that she wanted a proportional number of graduate scholarships and fellowships for beginning graduate students, for female graduate students. I told her I thought I could promise that. I thought I wouldn't even have to carry it to the Scholarship Fellowship Committee, although there might be some objection. But I wasn't sure, but I didn't think she'd like it, because the way it now stood, women were getting about 60% more of the beginning scholarships and fellowships than the proportion of their number in the total enrollment would warrant. And it's wonderful to see her collapse on that. We had a lot of bright girls who came in high scores, and they often didn't stay. They'd take a master's, they'd marry some male, usually less bright than they were, and go to work supporting him to get a PhD, and then he'd go off with some a chick and leave the girl who put him through graduate school. Well, maybe that didn't happen very often, but our problem was keeping the girls in graduate school during much of that period. they may not have been treated awfully well, and it was hard for them to get jobs.
I think there's no question about that.
Hard to get jobs because academic institutions weren't hiring women?
Right. They'd like to have them for deans of women. And not very much more than that.
How was Wisconsin on that score?
Not very good. They had people like Helen White and one or two other in the English department. History for a long time never had a woman as a member of the department. I think they have two or three now.
Four.
Four?
Mm.
Still on a percentage basis.
Mm. Well, I don't envy you, but you're going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, I think essentially Professor Curry's advice to us was to have fun, enjoy it, and that's what we're hoping to do.
Yeah, I think Curry would enjoy having you consult him from time to time.
Yeah, we've been wanting to get back to him this fall. We should be doing that shortly.
I talked to him a week ago. I'm going to see him in a day or two.
Well, tell him we will be contacting him soon, perhaps about a lunch and discussing where we're heading at this point.
I don't think of anything else to confess to.
Well, I have sworn and vowed not to interview anybody else in history, as I told you, in the history department.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to. They have said a little bit about it, and that's.
Shouldn't say anything about history. Said something about Paul Knappen as one of the powerful figures.
Well, and about the emphasis on teaching.
Oh, that was not just history. That was, I think the same thing was true in English and political science and so on around the shop. But after it got bigger, the departments got not just one new person. You know, you got the new man in the monastery. But if you get 15, or if you just get 5, nobody teaches it.
Mm-hmm. Well, should we have recorded this interview?
To do what?
I said, this is an oral history interview. Should this have been, is this a good thing to record?
I don't know. I don't know whether there's enough in here.
See, my feeling is that one thing is that prominent people, it will always be interesting to listen to them somewhat. I mean, perhaps even 15 minutes or half an hour. It would be nice for somebody to hear your voice talking about this.
Particularly
that's one assumption. Whether that's enough of an assumption, I don't know.
Particularly when I'm